When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Forever Dog.
This is the Couch Guys Anatomy. She's watched the show like a lot of times. Who is gonna be chief of surgery? Shonda Rhimes wrote the show and it is really, really good. Meredith Grey.
Hello and welcome to a new episode of Nicole's Grey's Anatomy. I'm so glad that you're here. This is an amazing episode. I just feel comfortable saying that up top. An amazing episode with Chrissy Shackelford. She is a staff writer for White Snacks Problem Areas on HBO. She's on a mod team at UCB called Attention Shoppers. She is truly one of like the best character performers and so funny. She's incredible. I'm so happy that she came on the podcast to talk about Miranda Bailey. Bailey is like the a fixture, a stable, a queen of the hospital. We talk about all sorts of clips that span many seasons. And we also discuss kind of some current Grey's news with this Taraji P. Henson, Ellen Pompeo interview that Variety did this week, which I highly recommend watching the video of. It's a great use of 30 minutes, which you have because Grey's is not on right now. Hashtag, it is the summer. Wow, that felt unnatural, but good. Let's keep it. So this is a great episode. We're going to get into it. But I just wanted to say really quick that if you haven't yet subscribed to this podcast, I would love it if you did. And if you didn't mind writing a nice review on Apple Podcasts, that would mean a lot to me. And you can always tweet at me at N Silverberg if you have any thoughts about Grays in general. Some people are tweeting episode ideas at me. That's great too. I put them on a little list and I offer them to guests, but really you can tell me anything you want. We are recording a bunch of episodes in the coming month and I'm super excited and we definitely want to incorporate your thoughts. So without further ado, let's get into the ep with Chrissy. I'm so excited because this episode we have Chrissy Shackelford here to talk about Miranda Bailey.
Miranda Bailey as the stasis.
As the stasis, a pillar.
A pillar of the show.
Okay. There's so much with Miranda. I was really reminding myself today. There's
so much with Miranda, and why specifically I say as the stasis of the show, because when I think back to Grey's, I'm thinking of who sets the tone, like writing wise, who is setting the tone of the show and who is propelling things forward just in the way she operates as a character within the scripts.
Yeah.
She is actually controlling the show. The tone and plot and pace.
Yeah.
And I think she's an undersung character because of that.
Oh my gosh. Well, okay, we're going to get super into it, but first, I got to know, what is your Grey's journey?
Okay. my Grey's journey. So I started watching the show in high school.
Okay.
With my mother. We watched, this was like the adult show that we watched in the sense that we watched One Tree Hill. We watched The O.C. We watched Gilmore Girls. We
teen
watched
shows.
Gossip Girl. We watched a lot of teen shows
Those are teen shows.
Those are teen shows. And this was one of the shows we watched where I was like, oh, this is a show that only has adults in it.
Yeah.
And to me, it felt like Degrassi with doctors.
Yeah.
You know, like just the way that it like the plots go, how crazy things get.
Yeah.
How many characters are, how they keep introducing more characters and assuming I'm going to love them when I don't love a lot of the new characters. But I stopped watching in season 11. So
pre or post Derek death?
Well, Nicole, you're actually a part of my Grace journey.
Am I really?
Yeah.
That's huge for me.
So I watched Grey's Anatomy a lot in high school and in college and watched the DVDs, watched seasons over. Seasons like 1 through 5, I feel like, are the ones I'm most familiar with.
Yeah.
And then past that, it's just like, yeah, I kept tuning in because this is what you do.
Yeah.
And
it's
then
what you do.
It's what you do when you love a show.
Yeah.
You like half put in the work when you don't feel like it's giving you love back.
Yeah.
And so around season 11, I was like checking in. I was watching all the episodes. Like I read a season synopsis before I got here just to be like, what happens in all these seasons? And I was like, oh yeah, I guess I got pretty far. But Nicole, you and I were on a Story Pirates tour.
We were.
In Evanston, Illinois. And you... Derek had just died in an episode.
God,
and you and
that really cements things in time.
I think someone else on the trip was talking about how Derek did. And I was a few episodes behind, but I was kind of checked out enough on Grey's that I was like, this is not a spoiler. You two can talk about it.
Yeah.
But because I found out that happened, I think I just was like,
I don't
want
to
watch
it.
That happen.
Yeah.
I didn't click back in because I connect with Meredith so much.
Yeah.
And their love story was really big for me. And I was like, I don't think I need to see Meredith lose him.
Yeah.
And I
totally respect that.
Didn't watch.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a tough episode. And I think it's like I didn't watch the series finale of Game of Thrones because I heard what happened. I was famously on a plane at the time.
Yeah.
And I came back and I had Branson just explain what had happened to me because I said, I'd rather it come from someone I love rather than just finding out on Twitter because I had to go to work the next day. And I was like, there's no way that I'm not going to find out. Mm-hmm. And as soon as he told me and I was like, this sounds like shit. And I was like, yeah, I actually don't need to see this.
Yeah. I never finished the last Harry Potter book. And I read those at midnight. I would go to the book releases. And the 7th book I read up until like the last 3 chapters. But I wasn't ready to be done with the journey. So I just never finished the journey.
That's kind of beautiful. And also seems like in the movie of your life, there's going to be like a moment when like you just return and you finish all the things you didn't finish.
That is actually like the central problem with me as a person. It's like, Chrissy, you have to finish the journey.
Yeah.
And that's something I'm going to have to overcome in my romantic comedy movie.
You do. And then, and then you have your own Derek type of deal in this movie.
Yeah.
In my mind. Oh, that's so interesting. I mean, I actually just really respect that because I think that a lot of Grey's fandom has to do with like being willing to put yourself through something because you love it so much.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it's like very strong to be like, no, I can love this and not watch a character that I connect with suffer.
Yeah. Well, I was rewatching some episodes today just to like refamiliarize myself with the series. And it's harder to watch now, I feel like, as an adult who has relationships that I like care about and am in a place where I like understand how much I care about the relationships in my life. Because every person I watch who is in pain on the show, like the patient stories, I get very sad and I picture someone in my life being in that situation and how I would feel if I were their loved one.
Yeah.
And it is hard to watch.
Yeah. No, being more acquainted with death and understanding that comes for us all doesn't make the viewing process easier.
By no means.
Yeah, by no means. I have to ask, so you say that you connect with Meredith a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel like you connect with the character Meredith, or do you also feel some connection with Ellen Pompeo? Because, you know, Ellen Pompeo in the news this week.
In the news this week. I haven't watched the interview yet, but I read the highlights.
Okay, yes. I mean, the highlights, it's all there. So for those of you who don't follow me on Twitter, because I did tweet about this quite a lot, Variety is doing this series, I think just...
Actors on actors,
in which actors interview each other.
Mm-hmm.
And There are so many pairs that are really delightful. And I would love to have been in the room that decided to pair together Taraji P. Henson and Ellen Pompeo. They are an amazing pair together. But it's also like, it's very cool that Ellen Pompeo was included. Like, I felt like really proud.
That she was chosen as like.
Yeah. Cause it was like all these really like trendy people who are like going to be up for Emmys this year. And like, mm-hmm. you know, Ellen Pompeo is great, but she hasn't been in like that circle of relevance for a long time.
She's not a flashy actor. She's like workhorse.
Yeah. Season 15, I think has been like it's been a banner year for Grey's in that they surpassed, just by the numbers, they surpassed ER for most number of episodes in a primetime medical procedural. Like, so they now are ahead of, they've set a record. Mm-hmm. Ellen Pompeo was in the news a year ago for setting a record for how much she gets paid per episode.
I definitely read that Hollywood Reporter piece,
which I'm obsessed with and I talk about
so
quite a lot.
Good.
But I've also just talked about in general about how Ellen Pompeo has really, she has nothing to lose. She really has like said over and over again, like, this is the end of my acting career. She feels very empowered to speak from her position. And mm-hmm. She's also just like super boss and doesn't give a shit.
Yeah.
So this interview with Taraji, Taraji starts by asking her, like, you know, what's it like to play a character for 15 years? You know, Empire is going into its sixth season. And sometimes I just like can't imagine doing it for that much longer. Like, how many more stories are there to tell? Like, I love this character so much. How do you do it? Blah, blah, blah. And Ellen Pompeo like pretty quickly pivots once she talks about it to being like, so what's your pay like? Basically just like, so like what, do you feel like satisfied with what you make? I imagine your rate has gone up so much. You do all these movies. And it really is this incredible conversation that acknowledges that money is a core part of fulfillment, not something that happens on top of it. Mm-hmm. And Ellen Pompeo really shits on like this idea that like it's awards fodder, or that, you know, the role is so incredible. And she's like, no, what am I getting paid? And they really start like talking numbers. And Taraji's like, I asked for like $500,000 for a movie and they told me no. And Ellen talks once again about like how Patrick Dempsey was getting paid so much more than her, double her for the first couple seasons of Grey's. And it wasn't until season 3 renegotiations that she realized it. And I just loved it. I loved reading about that.
Yeah.
And watching the, because it's a video, like a 30-minute interview. It's terrific.
Yeah, I think it's so, I also think there's a lot of like, it's easy for people, like critics, not like famous critics, but in the way that everyone's a critic these days. To
everyone's
be like,
everyone's a critic.
Everyone's a critic and everything needs to be critiqued. that like, it's very easy to say of like, oh, well, she's just going to stay on Grey's Anatomy forever.
Right.
And her to be like, yeah, I will, because I have kids and I make money and I want to have a life. And it's really bold to be like, there are other things in my life that fulfill me that aren't just acting, which is being able to have a life, being able to go on vacation, being able to spend time with my kids and know that I go to the same place to work every day.
Totally. She says that, like, you know, being at Grey's is a very mother-friendly workplace, that, like, people bring their kids, stuff like that. That's important to her. She says that she has been really realistic about, like, what her film career would actually realistically be like at her age with her popularity. She's like, you know, what is waiting for me on the other end? And like, mm-hmm. you know, I think that that's, on one hand, that's kind of pessimistic. And then on the other hand, it's like, well, yeah, but look at everyone who's left. Like, mm-hmm. it's not like there's this guaranteed, you know, film, blockbuster film career waiting for you on the other end of it. But yeah, I mean, well, the first question, one of the first questions he asks is like, what attracted you to the role? And she goes, well, I guess what I got the script, what I really liked about it is it was the lead character. And I was like, yes, bitch, just say it.
Well, especially with where she, like, what was she in before that? Old School? You know?
Yeah, Catch Me If You Can.
Oh my God.
A deleted role from Eternal Sunshine.
I forgot she was in Catch Me If You Can. at the bank, right?
Yeah.
She's the bank teller.
I think so, yeah. Or a flight attendant, one of the two.
One of the two. There, yeah, for women and, in that movie, and, there's and only flight attendant one of the or two. Bank teller.
It's always one of the two. Yeah. But so that was a part of it that I really liked. And then there was also a really good part where Taraji P. Henson was like, yeah, I mean, I don't think I've ever really been in a position where I can like turn down a role. And then they really, really got into kind of the racial component of it and being underestimated. I really recommend watching it. I think that it has, well, okay. So then the other thing is that she talks about how like she stopped being creatively fulfilled playing Meredith Grey like years ago.
I did read that line and I would love more context into what she said.
Yes, because it was pulled out of context and a lot of people like, I think were upset about that because it feels like you're insulting this character that you love. But basically what she says is that the other things started being more important. Like as an actor, there's only so much that you can be challenged playing one character for 15 years. And she thought about leaving when she stopped being challenged. And then she thought, well, there's actually other things that I'd like to accomplish. So she talks about being a producer and from a producerial role of like being challenged and fulfilled in that way. But the main thing that she talks about is like changing the culture at Grey's. She says that the first 10 seasons, which like, Jesus Christ, that's a lot of seasons. She said it was really toxic work culture. Mm-hmm. And she started, and she went to Shonda and she was like, I want to change. I want this to be a good place to come into work every day. I want to have fun. I want this to be like, not like competitive with egos and things like that. And so
that's really admirable.
Yeah.
Look at her for trying to change, but in more of the way of like, you're not going to be like, oh, this place sucks. It's always going to suck. I'm going to leave.
Totally.
You know?
So I guess she said that bringing Debbie Allen in,
who plays
Jackson Avery's mom, Catherine Avery, yes, but then also now Catherine Fox.
She got married.
She was an Avery by marriage. Okay. Her husband, she married into the Avery like world. Her husband abandoned it and was like, I wasn't cut out for that life and goes to, oh my gosh. Can you believe that that's my manager? I mean, like, can you fucking believe that? I am so of this industry. It's actually crazy. And good for me.
Yeah.
In any case, back to talking about the industry and as it pertains to Grey's. No, I actually was talking about what happens in the plot. Basically, you find out in last season that the Avery name is kind of toxic because a lot of women were paid off. It's a Me Too type of a plot.
Oh my God. She reverts
to her maiden name of Fox.
Oh, well, that's great.
Yeah, no, it's you know, I would say it's fine.
Okay.
It's fine. It's totally fine. But yeah, in any case, so they say they bring Debbie Allen in. She said that like she just really wanted to turn things around. It's very interesting. It's like Sandra Oh left after 10. Mm. Shonda Rhimes, that's around the time that Scandal was picking up. So it's like Shonda Rhimes was leaving around that time. So 11 is when Patrick Dempsey, who famously was like a very difficult person. So
on one of your eps, you talked about that he wanted to race cars. That was something I did not know.
Yeah, he was like part-time because he wanted to race cars.
One foot in, one foot out because of car racing.
And he just had a huge ego with his pay. Yeah, I think so something that she talks about in the Hollywood Reporter article in which she talks about her pay and stuff like that is she discusses that she asked for Patrick Dempsey to like be on her side and be like,
in the negotiations, he
wouldn't do it. So, I mean, I think that there were like
wild
egos and fucking, and they haven't spoken since he left the show. And she is a really diplomatic, like, we created an amazing thing on TV together. We have a really positive relationship. It's nothing has happened, but no, I haven't seen him or spoken to him and I wish him all the best. Hmm. And I'm like, okay.
Yeah, and nice to be honest about that. Like,
I mean, she's nothing if not honest. I just think that, you know, I'm 2.5-3 years into like working in TV, and even the most wonderful feminist employers are still operating within the same system that everyone else is operating in. And there are so many rules about like what is appropriate to say and what isn't. And I just, seeing Ellen Pompeo genuinely be like, How much do you make? Did your rate go up after this job? Why not? That's so frustrating. Well, mm-hmm. this is kind of what my pay journey has been like. Like that does more for me mm-hmm. than seeing an empowered woman portrayed on television. Like it's yeah. like, there's like two, you know, there's two halves. There's like the characters I'm seeing you create, but like, God, to hear an actress just be like, yeah, well, this person gets paid more than me and that's really fucked up. And this is what I said. And this is who I talked to. And it was after this kind of job that I decided I wasn't going to take it anymore. Like that like gives me a lot of inspiration.
And just to see closed doors conversations.
Yes.
It's just
like you never get to, yeah, that's, I mean, it's like literally like the AOC thing. It's like just showing us what typically you don't know how the government works. And it's yeah. like, oh, whoa. Well, that's weird. Like, I guess that's really helpful to kind of know how a lobbyist relationship works. Like that just helps me understand what my options are or how things happen. It's very interesting. But anyway, I truly stan Ellen Pompeo mm-hmm. and it has made me like Meredith Grey more.
Oh, interesting.
That's a very long roundabout, but like seeing all this stuff this week, just ever since she started really coming more into the public eye and being more honest about herself, it's really made me, as I'm watching in season 15, be like, I'm not getting a ton of from Meredith on screen, but knowing what Ellen is doing behind the scenes makes me like her more.
That's so interesting. I was in on Meredith from the jump.
I was not in on her from the jump, but she is like one of my favorite characters. It's just more that as time has gone on, I don't know if we've talked about this on the pod before, but like, she kind of starts, like after Derek dies in particular, she's like, I don't need love. I just need my career. And she becomes a little bit of a little more hollow for me. Mm. She's not dark and twisty anymore. She's not.
I loved the dark and twisty.
I love dark and twisty Meredith. Yeah.
Dark and twisty, I think, is what sold it yeah. for me. I love the dark and twisty. I love that she's got this like fucked up relationship with her parents.
Yes.
I found that very relatable. And I was like, I guess this is how I'll be as an adult.
Yeah.
You know, like, okay, so that's how that manifests. And it is correct, you know.
Not to plug another episode of this pod, but Shayna Taub just came on and we talked about parent, adult, child relationships on Grey's. And it was just, it is crazy how many different types of kind of like dysfunctional or fallen out or just like not compatible relationships they show between the characters on the show and their parents. And it's mm-hmm. really nice to see that. And it hasn't ruined everyone. Like Meredith has a ton of trauma and baggage, but like Izzy doesn't relate to her mom and she does just fine. Like, and it's kind of nice seeing a range.
Yeah. And just to be like, you know, like Meredith is dark and twisty and has these complicated relationships, but it also doesn't fully define her as a character.
Yes.
Like if that character breakdown, maybe it was written this way because people who write character breakdowns are insane, mm-hmm. but I wouldn't think it would be like dark and twisty, bad relationship.
With, right.
You know, that's not the picture I get from Meredith.
Right. Like it impacts how she can love a partner, but it doesn't impact how she does her job. She's still like really good at her job.
Yeah. Well, that was the other thing I was like, maybe I should just talk about ambition. But then I feel like that gets talked about a lot.
Yeah.
But the, like,
I mean, it's
central
so true,
idea
though.
Of ambition is the thing that I loved about the show.
Same.
I can't watch shows where people like, sorry, listeners, if you loved Workaholics, I just like shows like that where people have no ambition. I cannot connect.
Yeah.
And what I think is so great about Grey's is it is a workplace show.
Yeah.
Where the work is important. And maybe that's true of like all procedurals. I don't really watch cop shows. Don't care about them. But all of them want to be good at their job as
yeah.
opposed to like, oh, show, this is such a different comparison, but like The Office.
Yeah.
Where like being good at the job is like never a plot point except for Michael Scott, who loves paper.
Yeah.
And I guess Dwight.
He loves paper. Yeah. Well, and I think that Bailey is like a really like amazing example of that too.
Great seg.
And a perfect seg.
Great seg.
Yeah.
Into Bailey.
But she is. I mean, people often talk about Christina as being like the paragon of ambition on the show. But I do think that that kind of undersells Bailey a little bit, because Bailey is someone who is super ambitious and wants to have it all. Whereas like Christina is super ambitious and her career comes first. And Bailey's like, why wouldn't I be able to have the husband and the kid and the career? Like, I can do it. Just give me the room.
Well, she is the ambition with the thought behind it. And so that's why I think she is the tone of the show.
Yeah.
She's also an audience surrogate in a lot of ways, in my opinion, which is not the audience surrogate, but she's there to tell the audience what is right and wrong in many instances.
She is the moral center of the show.
She's the moral center, and she's also there to set the stakes for things. So like the Izzy cutting the LVAT wire, her reaction to it is one of the things that locks in what a fucking colossal mistake this was.
Yeah.
So every like emotional stakes Bailey sets up around a patient is what the audience is meant to believe is true.
Yeah.
About the situation.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. So in terms of ambition, she always wants the best surgery.
Yeah.
She's always wanting to do the job right. She's always telling people how they should do their job right. But she's never like, I shouldn't say never, but often, and for a lot of the first few seasons, she's not compromising morals because she wants to do the job correctly. Because it's not just about getting ahead. It's about doing the job in the correct way, which is morally and by the rules and by the book. And that's how she gets ahead.
Well, we've talked on a couple episodes before about the episode where she literally sacrifices her marriage in order to operate on the guy with the swastika tattoo on his stomach. And I think that's like a really, that's like a very like crystallized, like this is who Bailey is kind of episode, where she should not have done that. And no one would have said you really needed to operate on the Nazi. Mm-hmm. Like no one would have ever been like, you kind of messed up there. Like, sorry, Miranda. But she has this, I mean, perhaps she is a Libra. She has a deeply strong internal sense of right and wrong. And it's very hard for her to go against that.
Miranda Bailey is a Libra is actually the best.
I'm a Libra and I'm like a very true Libra I'm a textbook Libra. I'm
true Aries, which makes sense. That's why I would be a little bit Meredith.
Yes.
Fire sign.
Yeah. I mean, absolutely.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, I haven't rewatched that swastika episode, but do they ever reckon with the fact that maybe it was like not okay to call her the Nazi?
Yes.
Okay.
I think she
in that episode.
Yeah, I think in that episode, now that you bring it up, I do think she said something where like no one ever called me the Nazi ever again.
Okay, great.
I think is a moment in the episode.
Okay,
I could be inventing that, but I'm like 90% sure that that happens.
Because when I was rewatching episodes today, I mean, I remember that that was her thing, but I was like, whoa, that was her thing.
Yeah,
like there's a whole episode where that like the Thanksgiving episode where that
where the guest surgeon wants to work with the Nazi and assumes it's a white guy, and so she just like has him running around the hospital all day, being like, oh, the Nazi told me to tell you to go to this place and do stitches.
Yeah.
And like all this.
A great comedy plot line.
Oh,
which brings me to another point about Miranda Bailey setting the tone. Think of what the show would be without Miranda Bailey.
Less funny.
Less funny.
Yeah.
And the show, why it works so well is it's funny.
Yeah.
And it's very dramatic.
Yes. It's everything.
And Bailey is setting the tone of these comedy moments. She is oftentimes the character who has most of the comedy moments in an episode.
She really does.
And that, I feel like, again, is telling the audience, this is the kind of show you're watching.
Right. I think that's so true. I think that there are a lot of, like she's funny in scenes that aren't comedic scenes, if that makes sense. Like, like, I feel like a lot of the other, like, you start getting the music, like, and you're like, oh, this is a funny scene. And then it's like the whole interaction is funny, or like the premise of the interaction is funny. Whereas like, I think that Bailey often gets to like have jokes or like be funny in like scenes that don't get that kind of like music underneath. It's just part of her personality.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
She is a funny person.
She's a funny person in that world.
Think of who's Dan Panis.
are on. Yes, whose damn panties are on the board. Yes, so good. I was also just completely transported to the moment where she, where you find out that she's married for the first time.
Yes.
Where it's her anniversary, mm-hmm. and she's like dressed up and she's leaving the lobby, and Derek is there like brooding. Mm-hmm. And he's like, where are you going? She's like, it's my anniversary with my husband. He's like, I had no idea you were married. And I don't know if this is the same conversation, but it also reminds me of the conversation that might actually be the same scene where he talks about how he didn't have perfect hair in high school. He had like acne and he played the trumpet or something. Mm-hmm. And like, she was a nerd in high school and she's like, I'm sure that you were like prom king. And he was like, no. I really like their relationship. I like their friendship.
Their friendship is so good. And also Bailey's has a relationship with every, and granted, I stopped at like 11. You know, I don't really know what's going on with Bailey now. I feel like she had a unique relationship with every character on the show.
Yeah.
She's got a unique relationship with the chief.
Yeah.
Her and Meredith, obviously. Her and Christina.
Yeah.
Obviously. Her and Izzy. Her and George.
Callie. I love her relationship with Callie.
Yeah, they're very fun.
And her relationship with Arizona, where she thinks that she's going to go into do that like neonatal specialty, that fellowship.
Oh, yeah. You know, that's getting to the point where I'm like, what's going on?
Yeah.
Because I also did not love that she had OCD.
Okay, so
just the plot line.
Yes. One of my least favorite arcs of the show, to be honest.
I just feel like it didn't make sense with the character.
It didn't take for me. I was like, why is this happening? Yeah.
As a viewer who views Bailey as the center of the show, as like the heartbeat of the show, if you will, even, in medical terms.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Okay. The heart line.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Boom, 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 boom.
The thump.
Yeah.
The thump of Grey's Anatomy.
Yes.
The beating bass line.
Yeah. So true.
I don't want those kinds of stories for it. It was like,
yeah,
she is the one setting the tone, and now the tone is, I have OCD.
No. Yeah. I mean, just the obsession with the cleanliness, which is like not always what OCD is either.
Yes,
it also was like, it's about compulsion. It's not, the cleanliness is like, that's kind of a bastardization
of what, yes, of
a little
OCD.
Bit. Yeah. She's had another mental health arc of late.
Okay. What is that?
Anxiety.
Okay.
Yeah.
Makes sense. The fact that all these doctors aren't suffering from anxiety
Ben Warren is a firefighter now.
Oh.
And she has a lot of anxiety about, you know, his safety, mm-hmm. things like that.
That makes a lot of sense. How old is Tucker
nature.
Now?
Tuck is getting a talk about consent. That's how old he is.
Oh my
They're
God.
Giving him a talk about consent. He's like 14.
Oh.
13, 14.
Shit.
Yeah. Can you believe?
I guess I can.
Yeah.
He was born in season two, so.
Yeah.
Good for him. Ugh.
Yeah.
I also just think, like, in the first couple seasons, she's an unsung hero in the sense that she doesn't get the flashy stories.
No, she doesn't.
You know? She doesn't get.
She's a workhorse as far as, like, just she takes a bunch of patient cases. She just is good at what she does.
She's good at what she does. She comes into a scene and she says, Karev, I need you to do this. I need Izzy, you're on this. Izzy, blah, blah, blah. Don't talk to me at this thing, blah, blah, blah. And then that is essentially propelling us into what this episode's going to be about.
Totally.
She comes in. She does that. Every conversation she has is usually about a change in the other character.
Yeah.
And not often a change in her.
Right. Which is why then, you know, plot lines like when her dad doesn't know that she hasn't really been honest with her parents that she's separated. And then mm-hmm. he comes for Christmas mm-hmm. and she doesn't have her kid and mm-hmm. she's by herself. And he's like, he like pities her and he's like, what has happened to you?
Yeah.
And she's like, I'm happy for the first time mm. in a really long time. And it hits hard.
Yeah.
Because you don't always see her vulnerable.
Well, and the moments that she is vulnerable are some. of the best.
Yes, I was remembering today when Meredith has her ectopic, or not, when Christina has her ectopic pregnancy. Yes, you're
and
doing,
she's holding,
you're,
and she's holding the head.
Mm-hmm, she's holding the head. And yeah, so.
And she won't leave her side.
Christina's is, she's in there as a surgeon, and Christina's having her surgery. And I keep saying Meredith. Meredith on the brain.
Addison? Bailey.
Yeah, no, Addison is doing the surgery.
Yes.
And Bailey is up by Christina's head, like holding her hair. Mm-hmm. And Addison's like, okay, Bailey, you know, I can take you over here now. And she's like, I'm good where I am. And she just stays like being with Christina. Mm-hmm. That's like one of the first moments where we really see how deeply she cares for her interns.
Yes, how she cares for her interns. But also in that same moment, Meredith comes in, wants to scrub in.
Yeah.
And Bailey's like, absolutely not.
Yeah.
She is your best friend. She's naked. She's exposed.
Yes.
And I want to give her the most privacy she can have. Right now, you are not a doctor. You are her best friend.
Yeah.
And she doesn't need you in there.
I know. Oh, and such a good speech.
So she's like caring for her as a friend, as like an intern, as someone she cares about, and then immediately caring for her as a doctor.
Yes. It's so true. Oh, she's so good. Okay, so the first clip is one that you pulled, which, how could you not start with this? It's the first time that we ever see Bailey.
Oh, yes, okay.
Over the music, pilot. Over music that we never hear again, by the way. This music is crazy.
Oh, like the score?
Yeah, the score.
Okay,
I'm like, it's not typical. Anyway, that was something that I just thought about today. Not relevant.
You're like so plugged into the music of the show. Not even like the soundtrack is obviously iconic. Everyone had those CDs in their mother's car.
Yes, bitch. But yeah.
Mm-hmm. But the score.
Yeah. Okay. Here we go.
Bailey.
End of the hall.
That's the Nazi?
I thought the Nazi would be a guy.
I thought the Nazi would be a Nazi.
Maybe it's professional jealousy. Maybe she's brilliant and they call her Nazi because they're jealous.
Which is strange.
Maybe she's nice.
Let me guess, you're the model.
Hi, I'm Isabel Stevens, but everyone calls me Izzy.
I have 5 rules, memorize them. Rule number 1, don't bother sucking up. I already hate you, that's not gonna change. Trauma protocol, phoneless pagers. Nurses will page you. You answer every page at a run. A run, that's rule number 2. Your first shift starts now and lasts 48 hours. Your interns, grunts, nobodies, bottom of the surgical food chain. You run labs, write orders, work every second night until you drop, and don't complain. On call rooms, attendings hog them, sleep when you can, where you can. Which brings me to rule number 3. If I'm sleeping, don't wake me unless your patient is actually dying. Rule number 4, the dying patient better not be dead when I get there. Not only would you have killed someone, you would have woke me for no good reason. We clear? Yes.
You said 5 rules. That was only 4.
I
rule
don't
number
relate
5.
To that.
When I move, you move. Get out of my way!
I don't relate to that moment of Meredith. I would never do that to someone in a superior
you said 5 rules. Yeah, I would not do that either. Ugh. Perfect scene. So today I was reading up on this because there was an article that Chandra Wilson, who plays Miranda Bailey, chose her favorite scenes. And this was her first one. She said that all of the people who play the interns had kind of already been like, they had done like character work. They'd like gone and like observed at hospitals and they'd spent some time together.
Oh, interesting.
And she came at this, they'd already had a half day of shooting and she came in and she's like, I hadn't even met them as Chandra before I started filming this. And this was like the first thing I did. And I just like did this and I guess Sandra Oh was like, you like had like an orgasm at the end of that speech. She was like, yeah, no, it feels like amazing to just be like, do this, do that. And she said that scene, she just like, she returns to it a lot in her own research of like, what would Bailey do? And she goes back to that scene to be like, what, you know, who is the true core of Bailey in this pilot episode?
Well, okay. So one of the reasons I pulled this clip, and maybe it's because I'm an insane person that is constantly thinking about structure of television shows and how they work.
Good.
Good. And why I think of her as like not only character-wise central to the show, but also looking at it from a scripting perspective.
Yeah, she's telling the audience.
She is telling the audience, not only is this a perfect introduction, she is telling the audience. She's introducing the audience not only to her in the way that she's like acting and who she's being. She's also introducing the fucking hospital.
Yes.
And the rules of the world. She's actively, she's saying rules and she's laying out the rules of the world.
Right. Like, this is what a pager is. This is how things work. You have a 48-hour shift. Like, just these basic information that you do have to get out in that first episode.
But within a character.
It's so good.
Which is like, this is who I am. This is how you are treated. It cements how the interns exist in the hospital.
Totally.
In the first 5 minutes of the episode. It's where amazing. You're like, okay, this is exactly who the interns are. And this is how they operate in this food chain. And this is how they're treated.
How the different interns like react to her is like, and then that tells you exactly how you need to know about what you need about them, like what their relationship to authority is and things like that. Absolutely. So fucking good. I love the scene. And then I also love how then when Meredith and Izzy and this class of interns become residents, they all like some of them replicate this exact speech.
Yeah.
And Meredith does it. And like her pager doesn't go off at the exact right time.
Oh.
And they're like, what's rule number five? And it's like, she's like waiting for her pager to go off and it doesn't. And just seeing how deeply Bailey has impacted them as a teacher, that then when they become residents, they all are like, this is how you teach. You teach the way that Bailey taught us. It's just very moving.
Yeah. Well, I didn't even pull this clip, but it's one from her birth. The one where she gives birth, where they've had like a couple, she's been on maternity leave and they've had a couple of like rotating residents come in and they keep leaving. And she comes to the hospital and is like, what the hell is wrong with you people?
Yeah, you keep driving off these residents, scaring them. Like, you're my, calm down.
Yeah. Like, everyone says my interns are the worst, my interns, blah, blah, blah. And they're all like, Bailey's back. Thank God Bailey's back. Like, George hugs her.
Yes. I forgot about that. I fucking love that scene. Oh, that's so good. Okay, wait. What's next? What's next? Let's maybe do... You know, for those of you guys at home or in the car, wherever you may be, usually I have my computer with me and I've got the list of clips on one and the
peek behind the curtain
and Netflix on the other. And today, you know, I forgot to bring my computer with me to work because it was so late in the day. I just was like, I forgot to think ahead.
Yeah.
And so I'm doing both things on my phone, and switching between tabs is not as easy as you think.
Because phones are
hard.
Famously smaller than computers.
Smaller than computers. You have to use your hands in a different way.
And that's their thing, actually.
Very complicated.
That's how they market phones, smaller than computers. How much more time do you?
I actually am.
I will keep
you
going.
You actually
about
have done
how,
something perfect.
Okay.
We're there. Okay. To go just a little bit chronologically, this scene that I was so glad that you pulled, where she, after she has witnessed Meredith and Derek making out in the car outside of the party, and then the next day, Okay. So do you want to set this up?
Okay. So it's, if you remember, everyone listening, there's a party at Meredith's house, which also someone should do an episode just about the house. Just a side note.
For sure.
Wouldn't that be interesting?
Yes.
Because do people still live in it now? Does Meredith still?
So, okay. I'm thrilled to announce that that house actually doesn't exist anymore. She lives in the dream house that Derek built for them.
Oh, yes. I remember that.
But Meredith's two half-sisters live with her.
Yes, Amelia.
And Maggie.
And I did not.
And her three children. So
Maggie has three children?
No. Meredith has three children. Okay. Full house.
Okay. You know, I didn't love all the sisters.
No, too many sisters.
I didn't love all, but I did love Gina Davis.
Oh,
which is related to the sisters because of the brain tumor and stuff.
Yeah, Nicole Herman.
That is something that when I was reading the season breakdowns earlier today and realizing that I stopped mid-season 11, I was like, oh, I stopped in the season with Gina Davis.
Yeah.
I should go back and watch.
Honestly, it's great. I fucking love Gina Davis.
Well, ugh.
Tall queen.
Also, Baseball queen. League of Their Own.
Yes.
Okay. So there's a party at the house. there is a party at the house. It's like all the people from the hospital. Bailey's there. And you see Meredith and Derek. And they're like, I guess I'm saying making out because I still remember this from when I was a kid.
No, they're making out.
They were having like sex, but
I don't think they are having sex. I think they're about to.
Okay.
I don't think there's actual penetration.
But she's like on him. In my head, I'm still like, they're kissing in the car.
I think they are though. She doesn't have her shirt on, but they're kissing.
And you hear a tap at the window, and Bailey comes in. And what is she? Oh, do you want to move this tail wagon? You're blocking me in.
Yes. Scream. Yeah, scream, scream, scream.
So then that's when she finds out that Meredith and Derek are screwing around.
Yeah.
And that one of her interns is essentially screwing her boss.
Yeah.
And so this next clip is the confrontation about that. Remember, there was a party at a house before this.
Dr. Bailey, I didn't know that he was my boss when I met him. I didn't know.
I don't care.
Really? Oh, well, you sort of seem to not be talking to me, so I...
You see this? What's happening right here? Hey, this is the problem with you sleeping with my boss. Not whether or not you knew him before, but how it affects my day. And me standing here talking to you about your sex life affects my day. And the longer this little fling goes on, the more favors you get over the others who are fighting tooth and nail just to make it through this program without any assistance. When those people start finding out what's going on and they don't want to work with you and talk to you or look at you, and they start bitching and moaning at me, the more it affects my day. So no, Dr. Gray, I don't care what you knew or when you knew it. We understood.
Yes.
Yeah.
The way just Chandra Wilson hangs on words.
Yes.
The way that she is creating tempo in these speeches that are long.
Yeah.
You know, famous Shonda longs. I think she's one of the best actors that is like.
Yeah. She can shape
rhythmically
it. Yeah.
Shaping it. Hanging on my day, yeah. You know, like going up, who are fighting tooth and nail. Like she goes up in tempo. She lingers on words.
Yeah, it's art.
And again, so this is, I think, telling the, like, it's setting the stakes of, you know, the audience is like trying to fall in love with Meredith and Derek. And we kind of are. And we're kind of like, yeah, what's so bad about it? Like, can't they just fuck? They're so hot together. And this is telling the audience, no.
Right.
This is what is wrong about this.
Yeah, and it affects people other than the two of them. Because there's a moment earlier in this episode where Bailey confronts Derek being like, you favor her. And if I see you favor her one more time, I'm going to make sure she doesn't see the inside of Noir for a month just to make it even.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, ah.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And also, this is just going into like, what would happen in this real situation?
Yeah.
How could it? Bailey is for sure in the right.
Yeah.
But how could Meredith ever get a surgery with Derek that wouldn't seem like favoring?
Exactly.
And that's the problem with work relationships is that even if he's not favoring, and even if it is like her time to be in neuro or whatever,
yeah,
that would seem like favoring.
Absolutely. Absolutely. There's no way for it to not seem that way. I think this is actually now the perfect moment to then show the her talking about Mark Sloan clip, just because I think it's like spiritually related.
Yeah. And there's a lot to unpack with it in this climate.
In this current, I know. Yes. So this is season four.
Mm-hmm.
And Mark Sloan has slept with so many nurses that they're boycotting being in his OR, which is genuinely mind-blowing.
Yeah. That's
just
the
so leap.
Many the leap. Nurses. And that you would all band together and say,
we've all slept with him, right, ladies? Yeah. Like that type of moment. I'm just like, wait, what was that conversation like? Okay, let's take a look.
This boycott has gone on long enough. Now, okay, I have no authority here, but I would like to offer my thoughts on Dr. Sloan.
You're doing great.
This man is a whore, has always been a whore, will probably always be a whore. But, I mean, that's not a secret. He's not keeping it hidden. You all knew who he was before you got involved with him. And now you want to be all, woe is me. He doesn't call me back. He's dating other women. He's nasty. But he's a doctor here and a pretty good one. So let us all close our knees and get back to our job so he can get back to his job and help the people that really need it.
The nod, the nod with the punctuation of the elevator ding is
very good sound mixing.
Yes. So you start off with that speech being like, yeah. Mm-hmm. And then she tells them all to close their knees and you're like, wait, what did I sign up for with this?
When I was remembering this moment, I was like, oh, I gotta talk about this man is a whore, because that is so iconic to me.
Same.
That phrase. Just by the way, this is like one of my favorite hairstyles on her.
Yes.
The bangs with the swoop. The flippy, choppy. The flippy out we all had in like seventh grade.
Yes.
I just remember being so good. And then I was like searching for it this morning. And I also was like, even after I watched this, and she was like, I think we should talk about this.
I mean, it's like, I basically agree with the premise, which is that like, if you know that a guy is bad and you know that he's already slept with most of your coworkers, you can't be surprised when then he continues to sleep with most of your coworkers. The implication, however, that it's you got what you asked for, that's when it starts to get a little
right. Although, knew what you were getting into. Close your knees.
Although I will say, she is addressing 50 women. Like, how many people is she speaking to? It's like
staff.
It's a crowd. It's not a group. It's a crowd.
It's not like they're behind the little nurse's station.
No,
either.
They're all gathered.
They're gathered in the main corridor.
Some are on the stairs. Like, they can't all fit. Yeah,
this is the deck of the Titanic she's speaking to, essentially.
and we're playing the violin.
Amazing. But now, actually, when you bring up of that, of like, you know, if she weren't addressing a big group and she were just talking to like a friend, if it was like a girlfriend, she's like, come on, he's not going to change for you. You know that. Stop sleeping with him. Then it's like, okay, the message isn't that bad.
Right. But it's just like, it's like you could turn around and just yell at Mark.
Yes.
And be like, why did you treat all these women this way?
Doing this.
Right.
Yeah, that's the weird part.
So it's like you could do that instead of addressing all the women being like, why did all of you sleep with him?
Yes.
Because the answer, of course, is that he is canonically very good at sex.
That is canon.
Yeah,
and
so
also he looks the way that he looks. And I'm sorry that is.
No, it's true. It's a true.
Unfortunate to say.
It is a true. And so, yeah, I mean, it's very funny. It is. It doesn't age perfectly.
It does not age perfectly. It is not.
But it's still a great Bailey moment, because the way that she communicates it, like the idea is like a little iffy, but what she specifically says is great.
Yeah. And again, this is Bailey basically doing a sketch.
Yes.
A comedic sketch.
And she's
all
on her own. She's just there. Yeah. Everyone else is just watching her talk, which I love.
In a show that also like had a bomb scare. Not the same episode, but like this kind of comedic monologues in the same episode where there was a bomb in the hospital.
You know what episode is the same as the bomb in the hospital, though?
What?
Her birth.
That's right.
Which we do also have here. Should we do that one next? Or should we do, you know what? I actually might transition to this moment from season 8.
Oh.
I pulled a moment from season 8 that really stuck with me, where she talks to Derek.
Okay.
About Zola's hair.
Okay.
Do you remember this?
Yes, I vaguely remember.
Okay. It's this really nice moment earlier in the episode where they're kind of talking about parenthood, and he's like, it's crazy. Babies are so crazy. And she's like, yep, this is what they're like. And they kind of have this moment connecting on parenting. Mm-hmm. And then there's this really great moment towards the end of the episode where he's picking up Zola from daycare, and a white woman is like staring at the baby because her hair is all fucked up. Mm. And Derek gets like very indignant, like white savory. He's like, it's 2012. You never seen a white dad with a black baby before? Anyway, I don't need to quote it exactly because we're about to watch it, but here we go.
Maybe. It's just a
Excuse me?
Oh, no.
And it's 2012. You want to be shocked by the sight of a white man with a black baby? You're about 3 decades too late.
I'm sorry. Don't listen to him. What is wrong?
It's just unbelievable.
She was not staring at you because Daddy's white and his daughter's black. She was staring at you, too, because Daddy has nice hair. Maybe perfect hair, but for whatever reason, his daughter's hair is 31 flavors of wrong. It's hard on the eyes. Look, you are white, but your daughter is black. Do your baby's hair.
Amazing scene.
Weird music underneath, can I say?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's like this like sentimental, like what a like a swelling moment. Yeah. It's bizarre. But it's such a great moment. It's such a great Graves moment where it's just like the casting was so revolutionary to have such a diverse cast of doctors and stuff like that. And I think the expectation is like with like quote unquote colorblind casting, it's like then you don't acknowledge the fact of how unusual it is to see that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's realistic because that's how the world is, and also in the world is racism.
Yeah.
And so it's always like nice when you get those moments that are like not like a very special episode talking about like police brutality or something, but when you're just talking about the realistic thing of like, yeah, I mean, in no world would Derek Shepherd know that you need to like that black hair is different than white hair. Like there's just no fucking way.
Yeah, but he would know that he wants to get on a high horse about.
Yeah, he would be like, his daughter. I adopted a child from Africa. Like that would be a thing for him, but it wouldn't be a thing for him to be like, I mean, you see him struggling to put the baby's hair, Zola's hair in pigtails earlier, and you see like Bailey look on like being like, ah, like she's watching a horror movie. Yeah, I mean, I think that like, first of all, also saying it's 2012 is incredible.
Yeah.
Instead of 2012, to say it 2012, like that's a character choice, first of all.
Yeah. And that's how I say the year, though. And I've been called on it a lot.
Well,
and
it's a character choice.
I guess it's I am a character.
And there you go. But I just think that it's a good speech and a funny moment. And like Bailey would be the person who's like, fine, I'll do it.
Yeah. Like, I feel like that is a really important quality of Bailey.
Yes. I mean, that's kind of why.
I'll address this issue that everyone is noticing and no one has the heart to tell someone, I'll do it.
Yeah. And that's part of why I chose it, because it's a good example of like part of Bailey being like the structure and the strength of the hospital is that she is not intimidated by people who are supposedly like senior.
Yes.
And she's never afraid to like tell the chief how it is, or to call out Sloan or Derek, or for people doing
or
things.
Burke.
Yeah. And so I really love this moment because it's like, it's truly not her business.
Yeah.
Like it's not, but it's like kind of the greater good. It's like, she's advocating for this baby who like can't advocate for herself. It's
yeah.
Like, yeah. Your like black baby looks fucked up. Like you've like fucked up your kid's hair, and it's because you don't like get it. And that is a problem, but also like, I guess someone has to tell you.
Yeah. And like, just like what a good storyline.
Yeah.
For just like, okay. It's one of those things of like, okay, if you made this choice, if as the story, which is they made the choice that they're going to adopt a daughter.
Yeah.
Then you have to live in the reality of that choice, which is that
absolutely.
He would not know how to do her hair.
Yes. I just
and
think
he would be too proud to even ask for help.
And to even know that he should.
Yes.
It's amazing. Yeah, I think it's really good. So strangely, I chose two Derek Bailey moments. The other one that I chose is from earlier. It is the first thing I thought of when you said that you wanted to talk about Bailey. Because as we talked about, Bailey's vulnerability is like, not rare, but it's particular.
Yes.
And as the show goes on, you see her, especially after she has a kid, you see her have more and more vulnerability, which is a insecurity of hers that she feels like everyone babies her when she's pregnant. She doesn't want to be treated differently after she has a kid. And that's like a really, I think that's really in line with what we know about Bailey I actually mentioned this in the first, very first episode when we were talking about Yang with Bowen, that there's this really incredible scene when she's pregnant, when Yang is like staring at her stomach when mm-hmm. they're on a plane to go get, they end up not getting it, but it's Denny Duquette's heart. Mm-hmm. And she has this moment where she like kind of reads Christina's mind and she's like, I didn't know whether I wanted to keep it. Mm-hmm. And talks about like, you know, the concerns with her career and kind of what went into that decision, which is a surprising moment, I think.
Here's a question.
Yeah.
Do you think Bailey is the most emotionally intelligent character on Grey's Anatomy?
I think Izzy probably is.
Interesting.
Do you think that that's wrong?
No, I don't think that's wrong at all. I think Izzy's very emotionally intelligent.
I think that I might be kind of redefining emotional intelligence as like an empath. Like I think that that Izzy is like a very, very strong empath and like she absorbs the energy of people around her and that deeply affects like how she makes decisions and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I think Bailey has better perspective, like big picture perspective than mm-hmm. Izzy does. Izzy has, I think, a hard time like getting past what's right in front of her. Mm-hmm. And she's very emotionally driven. But yeah, my gut is that like as far as emotional intelligence goes and like understanding how people feel and like even if they can't say the right thing, like trying to kind of cater to that. I think that Izzy is very strong in that way.
Yeah. Okay. I feel like Bailey is like very, very aware of other people's emotions.
Yes.
Even if she's not like, I think she is empathizing with people a lot, but like not in the same way that Izzy does. But
I agree.
I feel like she's aware of the emotions of other people mm-hmm. and she's constantly making decisions on how to act with regard to that. And that's either like, I'm going to disregard it because actually their emotion is not important in this moment.
Yeah. That's
or I'm
going to
like, or I'm going to like psychically predict that Yang is pregnant.
Right. Or
that, did she know?
I think this was after Yang's ectopic pregnancy but she was going to abort it.
Okay.
And I think that it's kind of this question of like, Yang doesn't want motherhood anywhere near her career. Mm-hmm. And Bailey, who is her idol mm-hmm. and who she thought was on the same page as her, she's shocked that she's having this baby. And she's like, how could this person who has all these values and you know, wants what I want, how could she also do this?
Interesting. Okay, got it. So I was misunderstanding that moment.
No. I mean, I think that everything you said is super, super on point. And I actually think fits into kind of this next scene that I really like, which is that for all of Bailey's emotional intelligence and understanding, her motherhood and her insecurity surrounding people thinking less of her or babying her after she's had a baby or just like underestimating her in some way, mm-hmm. it's like a huge blind spot for her.
Yeah.
Like she's paranoid about it and she's really, like there are moments when she is worried that people think that it makes her weak. And people are like, no, I think it makes you a better doctor. And she doesn't, I don't think she totally believes that. So when Burke has his tremor and Yang is like controlling the board.
Yes.
She erases Bailey's name from a procedure.
Yes. I just rewatched this episode today.
A crazy moment. Like yeah. Bailey sees it up on the board and is like, ooh, this procedure, I really want to see this. And she just adds herself to the board because she can do that. Mm-hmm. And Christina, without telling Burke she did it, quickly goes and like erases it. Mm-hmm. And then Bailey goes later in the day and sees that her name has been erased. And she feels like it's because Burke doesn't trust her or thinks that she's not good or something like that. And she brings it up to Burke and it's a really good acting moment because you see him like be shocked by what she said, understand what must have happened. And then he just kind of says, I couldn't use you. Mm. And so when Christina ends up telling on Burke, which is such like an interesting thing that happens.
Yeah. That whole plot line. What
it's
I think
nuts.
Was nuts, but also. Yeah.
Yeah. It was perfect. That it was perfect.
It was a perfect plot line.
And because also Christina was the one who was like, no one has to know. And then at a certain point, she was like, I cannot do this anymore. The pressure is too much. So after that happens and they're kind of trying to figure out like disciplinarily what to do now, like no one died, but like they could have, like, mm-hmm. and that was, it was dishonest and his recovery was compromised and all this stuff. Bailey is furious and she talks about wanting justice and she's like, oh. he needs to be punished for what he did. You can't, because Yang gets put on her service and she's like, you're just letting Yang go back to surgery. You can't do that. Like mm-hmm. they messed up. And so they're doing this, I believe it is the conjoined twins separation surgery.
Okay.
And she is with Derek and they're like in the skills lab and he's kind of practicing on a dummy with the different nerves to not paralyze these brothers who are in love with the same woman, if you will recall.
A bated breath for the brothers.
The brothers. And
doesn't the woman like choose the brother she didn't immediately fall in love with that she's not
the one
dating?
That she's like not engaged to. Yeah.
Oh my God.
She's like, after we have sex and you fall asleep, we have amazing conversations. And you're like, yeah,
do you think the writers at the beginning of the season just brainstorm a million wild cases?
Yes,
and
I do.
Then put them on a board. And like, how could we parallel those to what emotionally is happening?
I think that's exactly what happens. I really do. Yeah, I do think that's exactly what happens. In any case, this is a tender moment that happens kind of surrounding this absolutely crazy story. And it's this moment of like friendship and vulnerability that I think is great. So
yeah. What also happens at the beginning of the episode where she gets erased from the board is she has to stand in front of the other surgeons. And they go through what happened with Denny.
Oh, she does the Denny M&M.
Yeah.
That's right.
And that other surgeon comes for her and is like, why do you think your interns have no respect for your authority?
That's right.
And at the same time, she's working with a case with a baby. So people are seeing her with a baby. So she's feeling infantilized about the
You're
fact
right.
that she's
That's
a mother.
Totally right.
And the fact that all of these interns, blah, blah, blah. So it's like all of her insecurities have been piled in this section.
I forgot that was that same episode. Okay, let's do this.
I can't do this surgery, Miranda.
I start to think I shouldn't be operating after the Duquette M&M. All the whispers and the talk. I let that in. Started to question myself. I believed it when I was told I was no longer of use in the OR.
Oh, so when you said you wanted justice, you were talking about...
I'm a surgeon. Uh-huh. There are lives in my hand. And to make me question that, well, that's like to put a life at stake every time I hold a scalpel.
I told Bert I could fix his hand.
But you did.
Yeah.
He is not paralyzed or disabled in any way as a tremor. If he'd been honest about that, well, there's no telling what you could have done to prevent it. You can do this.
Hold on to my wedding ring, honey.
Okay.
Great scene.
Great scene.
His listening noises? Is that what you're going to say? Just curious.
No, I was going to say, like, I mean, I always remembered that he had, you know, fun scrub caps. Like scrub caps were like this weird thing, way for the doctors to show their personality. But I forgot that, or I guess I never realized his are fucking boats.
Yeah,
and it's because
boats.
He has famously a thing
for
boats.
Fairy boats. Yeah. His fairy boat scrub cap that Meredith now sometimes wears after he died.
Stop.
She's wearing it when she wins her Harper Avery.
Okay, well, that is really emotional. I mean, I think that scrub cap is so stupid. Thinking about... Also, wait, second question. I know that Harper Avery is this prestigious award.
Yeah. Her mother won, like, two, I think.
Why is she wearing a scrub cap at an awards ceremony?
Oh my God,
because I'm picturing a gown
course.
And a scrub cap.
So she's actually doing a surgery that she decides not to, they Skype her in to win.
Wow.
She's in the OR. And you know what she does after she wins? She calls Christina. That's like the last thing you see in the episode.
Do we hear Sandra's voice or no?
I don't think so. I think you just, I don't, yeah, I don't think you do.
Okay.
I can't remember.
That would make sense. I love that she calls Christina.
Yeah, you see her like.
That, did they do that a lot? Because I checked out like right kind of soon after Christina left. Do they have a lot of like, oh, how's Chris? My only point of reference is in the Fast and Furious franchise, Paul Walker's character does not die, even though he died. He just leaves the heisting business essentially and goes and lives a normal life. So they often talk about him in the movie. In movie 8, the one that he's not in, as if his character is still alive and well and somewhere else. Do they do that with Christina?
Not regularly, but sometimes like there's a plot with a character who's a dreamer who's going to be deported. And Christina gets her job at the Heart Institute that she works at. And like that's like a plot line that like she calls her friend. And you know who she's talking about. Like I called my friend who's...
Works in Sweden.
Switzerland, yeah. And she opened up a slot for you. Like that happens like rarely, like from time to time, or you'll see maybe if a character comes back, they'll be like, "Where's this person?" And then you'll explain what they're doing. But for the most part, it's not like a regular part.
Okay. Well, that's good to know. And also good to not picture Meredith in a gown and scrub cap.
Absolutely. And it's so funny that I like already, I'm like, well, yeah, of course she scrubbed in like, or she Skyped in because she was scrubbed in. Like that's how it goes. Cause I mean, that would be psycho.
Okay. So that clip.
Yeah. I just really like that moment where she just is really honest about, it's not really a field where it serves you to admit that you have doubts about your own abilities.
Yes.
And I think that
that's so interesting.
You take a pretty big risk, even with your closest colleagues, to say, I don't know what I'm doing. And just the way that she puts it of like, when you make me doubt my abilities, you put the people I'm operating on at risk, because then I'm questioning myself when I'm working. And that's dangerous.
Is so true.
Yeah.
I never thought about that, especially because we work in an industry where you constantly doubt yourself, and that's like...
And if you don't, you're a bitch.
Yeah, honestly.
If you don't, what's your fucking problem? Are you bragging?
Yeah. Okay, that person's got too much confidence. That's so interesting. And so earlier before we recorded, I was talking about an Oprah Super Soul podcast.
Oh my gosh.
Sunday, whatever it's called, Super Bowl. In one of the episodes where this woman is talking about like a negative self-talk, and I was talking about the question of like, okay, who would you be without that thought? But one of the other questions with negative self-talk is that true? Is that really true? Can you prove that that's true? Is reality telling you that it's true? And
never considered.
What that clip is like, she's saying like, I have these doubts, and not only when you doubt me, it puts my patients at risk. That is like almost reality telling her that her self-talk is true.
Yes,
and
like
that's
self-fulfilling,
why that's dangerous.
Yeah, self-fulfilling self-talk.
Yeah.
Ugh. Oh, whoa.
I'm very into therapy.
Oh my God.
Days. Yes. That's all I really want to talk about.
And I mean, yes. That's in that way you are like Meredith. I mean, not that Meredith talks about therapy a lot, but game changer. As we all know, my favorite arc.
I know. I've heard on the pod.
I mean, I'm talking about it all the time. On the pod, off the pod, I'm always talking about Meredith and Dr. Wyatt. Okay, weirdly, we're at the last clip, which is, I mean, another iconic.
An iconic clip, but we should just watch it and then I'll talk about my thoughts on it.
I don't think we even really need to set this up.
Yeah. Oh, no. The listeners, they'll know.
The fans, they'll know.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I called them listeners. They are. We should only describe them as fans.
Well, the listeners of the podcast, the fans of Grey's Anatomy.
Got it.
So they're both.
Yeah, that's true.
They're both. We're both right.
They're multi-hyphenates.
Yes.
They're listener fans.
They do it all. Okay, season 2, episode 17. That's your little clue.
A little clue. Google very quickly. What could it be?
Bit of a clue. My car's on a cable and
life's like an hour glass glued to the table. Hannah Nallis.
Good girl.
Oh, Dr. Bailey, I can see the top of his head. He's got a lot of hair. Oh, he's cute.
O'Malley.
Yeah?
Stop looking at my vajayjay.
Yes, ma'am.
That's the whole scene.
That's the scene. That's the scene. That's
stop
the
looking at my vajayjay, a word that is now in the dictionary.
And that's what I hate about it.
Okay, yes.
I hate that word. I hate the types of people who you... I do not hate Miranda Bailey, but I hate that it was introduced into the lexicon. I hate that it's become iconic. I think it's disgusting. I think there's a certain kind of person who uses vajayjay as if it's funny, and it's the same person who calls Target Tarjay.
Yes.
You know? It is not the person for me, and I am mad at Shonda Rhimes for creating it.
I don't know how you can say the word vajayjay and not think about vajazzling. And that to me is like, what the fuck?
Exactly.
And Alex is kind of looking at us like, what? And I will say that is when you put little jewels on your vagina instead of pubic hair.
You know how like back in like 2007, there were like Nokia phones and you could put like jewels on the Nokia phone?
Or like you had like a trucker hat and you could put like jewels on your like trucker hat.
Imagine like a vagina is a Nokia phone or a trucker hat.
Just covered in rhinestones.
Not covered, in a design sometimes.
Yeah.
Artfully crafted.
Like the print symbol.
I just want to amplify Alex who said artfully crafted. Yeah.
Artfully crafted design.
Yeah. I can't say that vagina. It was like necessarily popular as much as it was just like, you know, like when people do like something like glitter eyebrows and you see it and people are like, the trend is glitter eyebrows. And you're like, who the fuck is doing glitter eyebrows? That's kind of what vajazzling was. It was like people were like, so vajazzling, it's a thing. People are getting vajazzled. And you're like, who? And they're like, people. And you're like,
Yeah, I never knew a single person who did it.
And thank God. And if someone I do know had done it, I don't think they would tell me at this point.
That is true.
But to me, vajayjay sounds like vajazzle.
Yes.
And I think of that. And in general, I agree. I don't think that the word is funny or cool. And I also just think like, it's just like, why would you use it? Like why would you?
You're so close to saying vagina.
Yeah.
You're absolutely so close to saying vagina.
And if you're not comfortable with talking about your vagina enough that you need to call it a vajayjay, then just don't talk about your vagina.
Also, like, you're a doctor.
Yeah.
She's a doctor. I feel like this moment, even though it has become iconic.
It's a lot of effort to be in the throes of labor.
Yeah, I just...
in the throes of labor to be like,
I'm making
need a
little
euphemism.
Joke.
Yeah.
Yeah. In the throes of labor, I'm going to be a little quirky.
Yeah.
That's what it feels like.
Wow.
And I just don't.
I feel very seen right now because it's something that it's like, I don't like it and I don't like thinking about it. But, you know, you kind of put it out of your brain. You think, this won't help me to get this mad about it. But it feels really good to get mad about it.
Well, I just remember like. I feel like people were so excited by that moment and you still like see anytime they're maybe not now, but back in 2012, as Derek Shepherd would say, like articles are like Bailey rules and Bailey is the best character from Grey's Anatomy. And this is why, who can forget when she said vajayjay? And I'm like, that's not why she's the best character.
Yes, that's true. That's the most relevant part of this all.
It's become a marking of her character, and I just hate it personally.
Because it's also not super how she is. Although, now that I'm thinking about it, she also doesn't really feel comfortable saying vagina when she's talking to Callie about oral sex. Do you remember this?
No.
Okay, so you know what? To be honest, we're going to take a quick pause, and I'm going to find the clip.
Okay, great.
Let me know when we're back. All right. Okay, so... we're back.
Mm-hmm.
It took me but 1 minute to find this song.
That's really impressive.
On YouTube. And okay. I have to tell you, she uses the word vajayjay in this clip as well. Okay, but here we go. This is the clip I was talking about. Oh, and okay, so basically, Callie is going to go on a date with Erica Hahn. And they've like realized that they're into each other and there's like sexual attraction there. And Callie, who has only ever dated men before and loves sex with men, she's like getting really nervous about it because she's like, we're going to go on this date. And like, what is going to happen? And she mentions it to Bailey, who's kind of like, whoa, I do not want to be part of this conversation. Mm-hmm. And later Bailey returns to like give this, speech.
This honestly speech.
I don't talk about sex.
Please, let's just pretend I never said even a single word.
I don't talk about sex with anyone ever. Not any kind of sex.
Bailey, I am begging you. This is it.
The vajayjay is undiscovered country. It is the motherland. You've never traveled there. You don't know its customs and ways. Now me, I've always wanted to go to Africa. But if I go, I'm going to have to learn a few things first. I'm going to have to prepare. I'll need shots, bring my own syringes in case something goes wrong, and I'll want to know how to get to the embassy.
Okay, now you've lost me.
Just talk about it. Not with me, with the other one. Just talk about the rules, the expectations, figure out how to gracefully demur if you find that you don't like the local cuisine. In Ethiopia, they eat stew off of spongy sour bread. That's not for everyone.
Oh my god, this is actually wild.
She's what really proud of herself. The way that she delivers that line of that's not for everyone is incredible.
To compare sex to Ethiopian stew.
Yeah. Not just any sex. It's lesbian sex.
Yeah.
Gay sex. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, that is the trappings of that. Oh, my God.
But yeah, I guess so. The only reason why that, because we're like, well, she's a doctor. Why can't she say vagina? And then I was like, you know what? We actually, that actually does kind of set like canon for Bailey. Yeah. She just like doesn't want to talk about sex.
Doesn't want to talk about sex. But okay, I guess that is a character trait. So.
But you know what? Then when she starts dating Ben Warren and she thinks that they're going to sleep together, she's only ever slept with Tucker. I do actually think that her discomfort, you know, that's something I hadn't really thought about before getting into this, because it's less about like her as the stability of the hospital and more just about her and her personal life and stuff, which is maybe why it didn't occur to me. But like, she gets really nervous with Ben Warren and like, and she goes to Callie for sex advice. Mm-hmm. And Callie was like, you need to get a bikini wax. And she's like, what? And like, gets really nervous about it because she hasn't slept with anyone, not only since her divorce, but also like ever who wasn't her husband. And she's really nervous about it.
Okay. Well, that makes a lot more sense.
Yeah. And she goes to Warren's house and she's really nervous. And he's like, she's like, it's the third date. And he's like, no, there are no rules. We'll just, do you want to have sex? And she's like, not yet. Do you? And he's like, not yet. Oh. And they're like, oh, okay. And it's a really nice scene.
That's really lovely.
Yeah. But I did kind of forget that that's like strangely kind of an element of Bailey.
Okay. Well, then I guess they set it up in season two.
But I don't know. I still agree that like while you're having birth, I don't know. I still think it's a little dicey.
But this is not specifically about Bailey. This is around the time where I feel like, so Grey's, tell me which came first, Juju or Vajayjay?
In the chronology of Grey's.
Grey's. Do you remember?
Juju comes first.
Interesting.
Yeah, because it's when Addison's becoming more acclimated. And okay. She brings the coffee or the mocha or whatever. And she's like,
the
this
one
is
that
good.
Introduces Juju.
Yeah.
This season, Juju and Vajayjay are like spiritual sisters.
I agree.
They were trying to
lingo.
Create lingo. Slang, they were trying to create their own language.
Yeah. A little much.
And it was transparent.
Yeah.
Like I can still remember being like, this coffee is good Juju. And it's like, maybe.
It's also just very funny for that to be like a New York thing. Like that's not a New York thing.
What?
Like the way that they're like, what's Juju? And they're like, it's a New York City thing.
But like, no, because Juju existed before the show.
No, but the way that when Addison says it's good Juju.
Oh, got
and they're
it, got
like,
it, got it, got
what
it.
Is that? And then the way that she explains it, it's like, it's something we did in New York City. And I think that Juju is a very funny thing to like associate with New York, because I think most New Yorkers would be like, what the fuck are you talking about? Like,
yeah.
Like that's to me so much more of like an LA like,
yeah,
vibey type thing. And I think it's really funny that, like, this is like super rich Park Avenue.
Yeah.
Like, she arrives in a fur coat with a red lip, like
her hair when she arrives.
The brownstone, like Addison Montgomery, Addison Forbes Montgomery. Like, it's like, I don't think that that's really a super like juju type person, but okay.
Yeah.
But okay.
Yeah.
But frankly, okay.
So those are my thoughts on vajayjay.
What? Yeah. No, those are good thoughts. Those are important thoughts. Okay. We're going to do Shondalogs.
Okay. Oh boy.
I am so excited. At first I had like a crazy idea. And I was like, we can't do that. I was like, you have to coin a new term in it. And I was like, no, that's too scary. And I can't
coin
do that.
A new term? But
I was like, well, that's what we're talking about.
Yeah.
And I was like, what if we did that? And I was like, no, I mean, frankly, absolutely not. Also, language means nothing now. Like, I feel like everyone I know just like abbreviates every single, like it's all, you know, listen to Seek Treatment with Cat and Pat, et cetera. Like, I mean, there's just like their language is like meaningless. And I love that about Lang, but
oh boy.
But frankly, like, yeah, no, we can't do that. Anyway, but it was really nice. It was a really nice thought that I had that I decided to share for some reason.
It was beautiful. Beautiful thought.
So, refresher, Shondalog could be anything. It can be you speaking as yourself. It can be an imaginary character. It can be someone in the world of Grays. You know Grays, so you know what a Shondalog is. You don't have to do the recurring thesis line, but it certainly, it can be a bit of a lodestar if that's interesting to you. And yeah.
That's a good song.
Oh, I remember this episode too.
Is that going to color your...
We'll see.
Oh,
okay. I was sick, not stupid. And the fact that you think that just because I missed 6 months, that I disappeared, that I don't see what's going on, I wasn't stupid. I got sick. And you know, when I got sick, you weren't there. Everyone visited me. I got cards. I got texts. I got fucking phone calls, okay? And while I was sick, I wasn't stupid then either. So you either didn't call me or didn't show up because you don't care about me, or because you care about me too much and you don't know what to do about it. So I'm back. I'm not going anywhere ever again. Because I did not like how it felt. And if you don't fix how you treat me, then you're the one who's stupid.
Oh my gosh, I could not nod my head anymore.
Yes.
What a line. I was sick, not stupid.
I mean, it's like something always just like comes up that I'm just like, what is wrong with me? Okay, wow. That was a song that I can't believe I put on that playlist because it's kind of like a different vibe. But it is like a type of Shondalog.
Yeah.
That, you know, that song. It's not all of them are
in world for me.
I mean, it's from Grey's Anatomy, okay. Baby. You know it's in the world.
Well, okay.
Here
world.
We go. This is you.
When I was 6, I had this basket. And I love this basket because on Sundays, I would go to the park with my mom, and she would tell me to fill my basket, but I never wanted to fill it up enough. She would ask me, why aren't you filling your basket? And there was something in me that couldn't fill it, that knew it wasn't ready to be filled. And honestly, when I'm with you, I want to fill my basket. I want to fill it with bread and with flowers and with grass and with juice and with anything that could be in a park or in a life or in a marriage. Because it's not the basket that means anything.
Oh my God.
it's what's inside of it. So yeah, I'll marry you. I want you to skin for the rest of
my
life. Hashtag fill my basket. Hashtag I want to fill my basket.
Oh my God. I want to fill my basket with juice. I just, oh my God.
Truly insane.
I know something deep comes over. One, yeah. When one does a chandelier.
Well, it's also so easy to figure out the metaphor.
Yeah,
you start talking, and you're like, you can put anything into a chandelier.
Absolutely. Oh wow. My God. Hashtag fill my basket.
Fill my basket.
Hashtag fill my basket with juice. Oh my gosh. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Wow. Thank you so much for having me.
You definitely have to come back and talk about. The house.
The house.
Oh, and what was the other thing we were talking about?
The elevator.
The elevator. The house. The elevator.
Locations.
And the elevator. The house. Locations. Baskets for people. People-sized baskets.
Are people-sized baskets.
It's a basket with a door.
A basket with a roof.
A basket with a roof. Oh my gosh. If you guys like Nicole's Grey's Anatomy, and I really hope that you do, you can always subscribe on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, wherever you find your podcasts. And if you don't mind hopping over to Apple Podcasts and giving it a little 5-star rating, leaving a nice review, you know I love it. Okay, thank you so much for being on the pod, Chrissy.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yay!
Forever Dog.
This has been a Forever Dog production. Executive produced by Brett Boehm, Joe Cilio, and Alex Ramsey. For more original podcasts, please visit foreverdogpodcasts.com and subscribe to our shows on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Keep up with the latest Forever Dog news by following us on Twitter and Instagram @ForeverDogTeam and liking our page on Facebook.